This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, December 19th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, experts say it's no surprise that millennials have lower credit scores when compared to other generations, with Arkansas millennial scores ranking fourth lowest in the nation.
And growth in the area cities downtowns, and we'll head downtown to visit a local knit night to see what local knitters are working on. That's part of this month's Locally Made feature.
But first, Arkansas Lieutenant Governor Mark Darr went before the Arkansas Ethics Commission yesterday as a report was presented on improper spending of campaign and personal expense money. After allegations were brought against him earlier this year, Darr self-reported violations against himself, saying he was unaware of mistakes in how the spending was handled. The meeting was closed to the public, and afterward, Darr refused to say much to reporters as he left with his attorney.
You guys gonna comment?
We're going to comment later.
Do you plan to run for re-election?
I don't know.
Will you resign?
No.
You don't think a misuse of public money is worth resigning over?
What was your take on the findings?
Darr didn't say anything else at that point. Attorney Matt Campbell, a blogger who runs the Democratic-leaning Blue Hog Report, brought the original allegations. Because he filed one of the complaints, he was present during the hearing and told reporters afterward that the lieutenant governor was remorseful.
Mr. Darr made a statement, apologized to the people of Arkansas for his mistakes, thanked me for the report, quote, regardless of the motivation, and said that he's, you know, looking forward to reimbursing and just kind of moving forward in terms of transparency.
The Ethics Commission did not take any immediate action, but will eventually decide what's warranted. This follows a legislative audit last week that showed Darr misspent more than $12,000 from his office budget on personal items and travel.
Arkansas's senators were split yesterday in Washington as the chamber approved a two-year budget deal. Democrat Mark Pryor voted for the measure that staves off the threat of another partial government shutdown. Republican John Bozeman voted against it, saying sequestration was making an impact in reducing government spending.
I really felt like the Budget Control Act was working. This is the first time, actually 2 years in a row, we've cut discretionary spending since World War II. And the problem with this budget act is that you have additional spending now and then additional cuts way down in the future. The problem is that those cuts never come about.
After passing last week in the House, the bill now heads to President Obama for his signature.
Hewlett-Packard says it will be adding around 200 highly skilled jobs to its facility in Conway. The announcement was made yesterday as state and local officials gathered at the Capitol. HP says the jobs will mainly consist of analysts, programmers, and other highly skilled tech workers who will be hired under that company's growing healthcare information division. Governor Mike Beebe said the area is a good fit for the types of jobs needed for this expansion.
Conway obviously is a great location for it with the higher education facilities that are available. And with the, you know, Conway's one of those demographics in the state that's a little different than most places. They have a younger demographic than most cities, and they have a really high education level per capita-wise.
Earlier this year, HP announced layoffs of hundreds of workers at its call center in Conway. State economic development officials say they are working to determine whether the company still meets an employment threshold needed to receive the full amount of qualified incentives from the governor's Quick Action Closing Fund.
An osteopathic medical school that could eventually serve 600 students could be in Fort Smith's future. According to thecitywire.com, the Fort Smith Regional Healthcare Foundation is investigating the feasibility of a facility that would teach osteopathic medicine, which is a system of medical care that emphasizes the interrelationship between structure and function and focuses on the body's ability to heal itself while using current medical and surgical practices. The Fort Smith Regional Healthcare Foundation, which was formed after the sale of Sparks Health System to Health Management Associates, has around $50 million, not all of which would be available for the school. The foundation has taken the initial steps of contacting the Commission on Osteopathic College Accreditation, and two consultants have been hired to conduct a feasibility study that should be complete sometime in April. Currently, there are only 30 osteopathic medical schools in 28 states. No such schools in Arkansas.
The University of Arkansas in Fayetteville has announced its new Associate Vice Chancellor of University Relations. Starting next year, Laura Jacobs will fill the role vacated after former Associate Vice Chancellor John Diamond was fired earlier this year. Jacobs returns to the U of A after serving as the Communications Director at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art since 2011. Jacobs previously worked at the U of A in the University of Relations office beginning in 1998. Serving in various roles, including Senior Director of Strategic Communications.
Cloudy tonight, slight chance of rain, lows around 54. Cloudy tomorrow, 30% chance of rain. Highs from 55 in northwest Arkansas to lower 60s for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, chance of rain, possibly some thunderstorms after midnight. Lows from 35 to 41.
Or a car, you're probably familiar with credit reports and your three-digit credit score. But they may not be as familiar to people of younger generations. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis took a look at a recent report that looked at credit data for different age groups. Here's his report.
The Wall Street Journal last month reported that not only have young people become more cautious about borrowing, but that they've also gotten worse at making timely bill payments. The data for this story largely came from the annual State of Credit Report by Experian, one of the big three credit information agencies in the U.S. This year's report, which is the fourth such assessment, looks not only at the credit behaviors of millennials, but also at members of Generation X, baby boomers, and the greatest generation. 10 million consumer credit records were taken into account, looking at a number of factors, including the generation's average credit scores, late payments, average debt, and so forth. Of all the generations, millennials had the lowest average score at 628, a full 25 points lower than members of Generation X, and more than 100 points lower than the average score of the greatest generation. Rod Griffin is the director of public education for Experian. He says that one of the reasons younger people have lower credit scores can be tied to the cliche, with age comes wisdom.
So young people have little experience with using credit, and I think that's an important factor. The millennials may have actually more access to information about how to use credit, but they have little experience in using credit. So I think that may be one factor. We've seen a higher utilization ratio with younger people, as well as a higher number of late payments. So those two things are going to have a significant effect on their scores.
Joel Dolger agrees that those are the two biggest factors used to determine one's credit rating. For about 16 years, he has educated people about credit, and he is the director of community relations and housing counseling for Credit Counseling of Arkansas. He also says that it's not surprising that millennials have lower credit ratings than their elders.
If you think about different generations and where they make their financial mistakes in their lifetime, it probably tends to happen earlier in life rather than later in life. So the mistakes of the greatest generation and of the boomers and even of the Gen Xers, they've probably dropped off credit histories already, because that sort of information, negative information, only lasts on a credit report for 7 to 7.5 years. In general, there's a few exceptions, but generally after 7.5 years, your mistakes are wiped clean. Whereas the millennials, they've still got those mistakes showing up on their credit report.
And a shorter credit history is one of many factors Griffin says hinder millennials' credit rating.
I think the key factors for young people are really that they have, in most cases, very little credit history, and their accounts typically have a very low limit. So as a result, they may make a fairly small number of purchases, but carry a high balance as compared to their available limits, and that's a negative factor for them. So if a young person has a credit card with a $500 balance and they charge $250, they have a 50% utilization rate, and that's going to have a significant negative impact.
Indeed, Dolger says that a person's credit utilization makes up about 30% of his or her credit rating. However, figuring one's credit utilization isn't necessarily cut and dry.
It's not just how much of your total available credit you're using, but it's on each individual account. So if you've got three different credit cards, and you've got the balance on two of them at a very low level, but you've got a third one where you're very close to the credit limit, that's going to ding your credit score.
But aside from the pure numbers aspect of the different generations' credit standings, the data in the Experian report shows that people from all generations, not just millennials, tend to have worse credit in the South than they do elsewhere in the nation. In Arkansas, millennials have an average credit score of 605, which is tied with Louisiana and South Carolina for the fourth lowest credit scores in the nation for millennials. Dolger says that income level alone could possibly be responsible for the varying levels of credit among different areas of the country.
A lot of people are struggling these days. If you have less money, you have less wiggle room in your personal finances. If you're relying on credit in order to kind of bridge a gap between where you need to be and what you're bringing in, then there's just a greater risk for you to fall short one month and miss a payment, get behind, and that negatively affects your credit.
Griffin agreed that economic factors could play into the South's lower credit rating, but he also speculated that another reason for lower credit in the South could be cultural.
If you look at Texas, for example, as I said, where I live, there's a large Hispanic population. And in places, part of that culture is a distrust of banks. And so there's a reluctance to have bank accounts and credit accounts. That's not all bad, but it makes it more difficult to have, you won't have a credit history if you don't have banking arrangements. So the culture itself and the cultural attitudes could have some effect there as well.
Even though millennials' credit standing isn't as glowing as that of older generations, Dolger says that the ability for young people to attain credit cards has changed considerably in the past decade, most notably through implementation of regulations like the CARD Act, which restricts credit card companies from marketing to students on college campuses.
If a person is younger than, I think it's 21, they have to be able to show that they can afford to pay back a line of credit that's extended to them. It was crazy for a while where a student could put down on a credit application zero income, nothing, no income whatsoever, and they would be given a line of credit. There's no indication that they'd be able to pay that back, but the people in the marketers in the financial services industry knew that if the student couldn't pay or young person couldn't pay back themselves, then mom and dad would likely help them out or somehow they'd find a way to pay it back, even if it would put them in financial distress. And so some of that has been clamped down on.
But with more stringent rules on attaining credit come stiffer reprisals from creditors.
It used to be that collection agencies would be assigned debts or they would purchase debts and they would work them. And if it didn't pan out for a while, that debt would just kind of go into deep freeze. And then once 7.5 years passed from the time the original delinquency, it would just drop off. But now collection agencies are much more aggressive. They're more likely to trade and work debts. And I think the result of that is not only do people get more collection calls, but also that continues to have an impact on people's credit reports.
So what pitfalls can young people avoid to help get a good credit footing?
One is not being in the habit of tracking what you've got going on, not looking on a regular basis on what your income, expenses, and payments to creditors are. It's very easy to be tempted to say, I want this item or I want this experience, and to use a line of credit in order to go out and get it. You've got to balance things out because life isn't just trying to maximize your credit score. You should have fun. You should have some things that you enjoy. But you have to be conscious about what you're taking on so that you don't overextend yourself.
We'll have more from Joel Dolger next month. For more on the State of Credit Report, visit livecreditsmart.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
Though the Northwest Arkansas community is a low-crime area, it is important to take simple steps to prevent theft.
We are very fortunate. We don't have a lot of violent crime in Fayetteville. I mean, it's one of those you don't have to worry about being mugged going down the streets or, you know, just a random shooting or anything like that. Those are not problems that we've had to deal with. So people have these false senses of security of where they just don't want to, they don't think to lock their doors, they don't think to remove their valuables. And what we say is a crime of opportunity. It may be something where this person may have not had the intent to go out and steal something. They may have just been walking along, happened to see something in a vehicle that they find a value that's important to them, and they may try to take that risk of, you know, especially if it's an unlocked vehicle, it's very simple. Or if it's a locked vehicle, if it's in plain sight, they may decide to break that window and take it. And, you know, a lot of those we think can be prevented.
In just about 9 minutes on Ozarks at Large, we talked to a local police officer about preventing theft during this holiday season.
One night after playing a gig, musician Amanda Palmer was signing autographs.
And a guy comes up to me and hands me a $10 bill. He says, "I'm sorry, I burned your CD from a friend. I just want you to have this money." And this is the moment I decide I'm just going to give away my music for free.
I'm Guy Raz, giving it all away. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen to the TED Radio Hour Sundays at noon on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. Downtown redevelopment is big business in Arkansas. In the central part of the state, the renaissance of the River Market and Argenta areas of Little Rock and North Little Rock are well chronicled. Conway has seen a rebirth as well. Northwest Arkansas is also aggressive in the corridor between Fayetteville to Siloam Springs with its downtown efforts. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas recently caught up with Mike Malone, the CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council, for a conversation on why his influential business group is committing resources to downtown causes.
You guys have part of a five-year plan. Downtown redevelopment's a big part of that. What have you seen that tells you downtown redevelopment is so key to the region up there?
Well, as you know, we've had dramatic job growth in Northwest Arkansas, and a lot of our employers are desperate for talent. So we're working on some projects and some initiatives that help ensure that Northwest Arkansas remains a great place to live and work, so that we can retain talent and make it easier to recruit more talent. Downtowns are a key part of a growing and vibrant community, and so we decided to offer some resources to several cities in Northwest Arkansas, give them some technical assistance if they want it, to help bring their downtown organizations up to a great level of capacity, and do some programming and some events in the various downtowns in Northwest Arkansas.
You're referring to the consultant that you guys have contracted with, Daniel Heinz, who used to be with the downtown Bentonville group there. Tell me some of the technical things he's going to help them with in terms of developing some game plans for their downtowns.
Well, you're exactly right. We engaged Daniel Heinz and his new consulting practice to offer him as a resource to Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Bentonville, and Siloam Springs and their downtown organizations. And he's going to work with each of the cities, if they're interested, and to the level it's needed to create a downtown organization, make sure that they're structured and organized in a way to be effective. We'd like to see each of the downtowns have dedicated staff, so that there's somebody who wakes up each day thinking about programming and events and activities in the various downtowns, and also develop some way of measuring how we're doing, how the individual downtowns are doing. So almost a scorecard or a series of benchmarks for the various downtowns as well.
Let's talk about one of your busting at the seams downtown success stories up there, and that's in the Bentonville community. Obviously, the Crystal Bridges Museum has helped facilitate a lot of that, but for people who aren't aware or who have not been to Bentonville lately, with the Walmart headquarters there as well as a lot of other large firms, what's happening in downtown Bentonville? How much has that community been transformed in the last, say, 3 to 5 years?
You know, it's dramatic. 3 to 5 years ago, at nighttime, it was a sleepy downtown. There wasn't much activity around the square. Even during the daytime hours, there was a much lower level of activity. Today, you go to the Bentonville Square almost around the clock, and you see nightlife, you see restaurants, you've got arts and culture. The 21C Museum was just named by TripAdvisor the online travel resource as the best new hotel in the United States, the fourth best new hotel in the world. So you've got arts, you've got culture, you've got people walking, you've got people recreating, you've got business, you've got industry, and you've got people living downtown. So it's a great mix. It's a lively, vibrant downtown now. And again, I keep coming back to that's what talent, especially young and creative talent, that those are the kinds of things that they crave. And young creative talent can go anywhere in the world. They a lot of times can work on a laptop, and they're very mobile. They're looking for interesting and exciting experiences. And so a downtown that offers live, work, and play certainly will appeal to young creative talent and all the folks in our region, we believe.
It makes it easy for a guy that's the CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council there for his job, too. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what's happening in terms of entrepreneurship up in Northwest Arkansas. This has been another big focus for the council and for a lot of the business leadership in Northwest Arkansas. You're speaking to it in terms of downtown redevelopment is a key component to attracting that type of young, vibrant, new entrepreneurial spirit that the region is known for. Tell me kind of what's the lay of the land today in terms of entrepreneurship in Northwest Arkansas?
We've had a great couple years of bringing some organization and some structure or making sure resources are available to entrepreneurs. And so a lot of the building blocks and pieces are in place, much like what's going on in Central Arkansas as well with the efforts in North Little Rock and Little Rock and Conway. And it's great to see that happening in Central Arkansas. We're working real hard to make sure that our region and our state have available sources of capital at various steps and stages in the startup life cycle to make sure that when we've got companies that are investable, that they're local investors or Arkansas investors that know about those opportunities. The last thing we want is to incubate or start up companies here and then have them picked off by venture funds or resources that come in from out of state. We want to nurture them, grow them, and keep them here as well.
So is there going to be competition between the regions for some of that capital? Is there going to be competition between the regions for just some of the resources that that compete for entrepreneurship in Arkansas? Or do you see the two regions being able to collaborate on that front?
Oh, I think it's absolutely a collaboration. We've talked a lot already with the Little Rock Chamber, with Warwick Sabin, with folks in Conway, and there are many more similarities in what we want to pursue, and we could pursue that together. We can achieve some savings and economies of scale by working together, we're convinced. It's great to see. This state's got a lot of opportunities ahead of us, and in the area of startups and entrepreneurship, we know we're going to be able to work with Central Arkansas and really make a difference.
All right, last question for you here, Mike. We got about 60 seconds left. Give me a look into the crystal ball. What do we have going on in 2014 that's going to make a difference that is going to be on people's radar that's not right now?
In 2014, we look forward to certainly identifying those sources of capital for startups and bringing some structure there to make sure that we're nurturing companies and growing them and keeping them here. We're going to do a lot of work around making sure that our workforce training resources are aligned with employer needs. We don't want to train for training's sake. We want to make sure that it's what will help our employers. Some educational initiatives and always infrastructure. A fast-growing region like this, if we don't keep up with infrastructure, we'll lose our momentum and fall behind. And so we've got to continue to work on highway issues as well as airport and airport-related issues as well.
That was Mike Malone, CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council, talking with Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas. Support for Talk Business Arkansas and Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, The electric cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity, coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And Mitchell Williams Law, providing diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Mitchell Williams Law Firm employs nearly 80 attorneys at offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
Police Department received 44 calls for vehicle burglaries in the month of November. Of those, 35 vehicles were unlocked. In an effort to stress the importance of locking doors and windows, the FPD has launched an educational campaign over the coming weeks to help residents prevent becoming victims of theft. Sergeant Craig Stout, Public Information Officer with the FPD, came by the studio to offer these tips.
One of the biggest problems that we have in Fayetteville, crime-wise, is property crime. And sadly, so much of it could be prevented. We have done some studies. One of the quotes that I threw out just recently was like in the month of November, about 80% of our vehicle break-ins that we had during that month were vehicles that were unlocked, just where it's a simple crime of opportunity. And if you take those valuables out, maybe move them out of sight, criminals are somewhat lazy by nature. And if the fact that they won't go break into a car where there might be something inside, if it's locked, they'll just move down and find an easier target.
How does that compare to other places? I mean, is it just because we're in lovely Fayetteville and people feel safe?
I think a lot of it is people have those perceptions, and we are very fortunate. We don't have a lot of violent crime in Fayetteville. I mean, it's one of those you don't have to worry about being mugged going down the streets or, just a random shooting or anything like that. Those are not problems that we've had to deal with. So people have these false senses of security where they just don't want to, they don't think to lock their doors, they don't think to remove their valuables. And what we say is a crime of opportunity. It may be something where this person may have not had the intent to go out and steal something. They may have just been walking along, happened to see something in a vehicle that they find a value that's important to them, and they may try to take that risk of, especially if it's an unlocked vehicle, it's very simple. Or if it's a locked vehicle, if it's in plain sight, they may decide to break that window and take it. And, a lot of those we think can be prevented.
So essentially, we're just tempting the bad guys out there.
We are. We're making it far too easy for them to take off with our stuff. So that's why we're trying to do this. And we're wanting to focus not only on vehicles, but on your homes, things that you can do to, maybe cut down on some of these property crimes.
Well, what is the punishment? Is it a misdemeanor crime to break into a car?
It's actually a felony crime. Okay. It is actually a felony to break into a vehicle. It's called breaking in, and it is a felony charge. So they could be looking at prison time for that. And typically we find that, a lot of these, whenever we, make an arrest for that, we can clear up a lot of cases because they're responsible for multiple, but then we have the problem of trying to track down whose property. Sometimes even the criminals themselves will actually cooperate a little bit to try to point out potential victims so we can try to get as much property back as possible. However, if we can, what's the old adage of, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure?
Right.
So, but property crime is really our Achilles tendon here in Fayetteville.
Christmas is next week. Mm-hmm. It's the holiday season, and a lot of people call it the season of giving. Mm-hmm. But people might consider that the season for taking also.
It absolutely is. You do typically see like a spike in some of our shopliftings at some of our, retailers. Break-ins to cars and even homes are also susceptible during that time frame. Your vehicles, obviously, your shopping areas, whether you're up at the mall or some of the other retailers, obviously those, as we get closer to Christmas, those get busier and busier. So the opportunities are more, the more people that they have that, someone might be willing to take something. Same is true of our burglaries, for the fact that, this is typically the time of year where a lot of people may be traveling, leaving their homes. You want to make sure that you try to make sure your home is secure as possible. Lock your doors. Obviously, another problem that we have is people who may forget to close their garage doors at night, get items taken out of that. Another good opportunity to just think about it is, a lot of people may have, parked their vehicle outside, because if they're like a lot of us, our garage may be a little cluttered, you may not be able to pull the vehicle in there. However, you've pretty much left a key to your house inside of your vehicle with that garage door opener. It doesn't take much to smash a window, or even if it's an unlocked door, and now we have access and easy access to the garage, and then probably to everything that's inside your house. We recommend, especially with university students who are, finishing up their finals right now, getting ready to go home, try to limit, the information that you put out there about where you're going to be gone, especially when it comes to social media. Everybody's very keen about, posting all of these great things that we're doing on social media.
Or even tagging themselves at the airport.
Exactly. And unfortunately, I can always say is, on your, like your Facebook friends list, how many people do you really know on that where you have a lot of acquaintances? Some of those may look at that as an opportunity to, unfortunately, go take something that belongs to them because they know that you're going to be out of town because you just posted a picture of yourself on your, ski vacation in Colorado or wherever. So what you've unfortunately done is you've just told, everybody that has access to your profile that you're out of town and you're going to be out of town for a significant amount of time.
What is the best way to, just making sure all your windows are locked?
It is. There's some small steps that you can do to kind of what we call burglar-proof your home. And it's nothing, you have to remember that no matter what steps you take, if someone is really dedicated to breaking into your home, they can do that. Some of the little things that you can do is like, and they're fairly inexpensive, is, a deadbolt with a 1-inch locking throw on your front door. And what we mean by a 1-inch locking throw is when you engage the deadbolt, when you throw it all the way out, it locks, which also means making sure that the hole that the deadbolt goes into is deep enough that it will go all the way and lock.
How do you lock a garage door?
They're actually on your garage door. Most of your garage doors, when they drop down, there will be a little button over on the side where you can actually throw a latch to where it won't raise up even if someone can break into the car. And most garage doors are equipped with that type of device on there. A lot of people may not know that, but if it's something you're going to be gone for an extended amount of time, we recommend locking that garage door so someone, say you do have your extra, garage door opener in a car that you're leaving, you can lock that to where it won't, the garage door won't go up.
All right. Well, I don't think I have anything else. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sergeant Stout also recommends not placing boxes or wrappings from high-dollar Christmas presents out on the curb. That, too, is just inviting someone into your home to steal perhaps that new TV. Sergeant Craig Stout is the Public Information Officer with the Fayetteville Police Department. For the latest tips, find the FPD on Facebook. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, December 19th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas, and here is Becca Martin Brown, Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So what's on your Christmas list to Santa?
Oh, gosh, you just had to ask me that, didn't you? I like Lululemon athletic wear. I wouldn't mind a pretty painting.
Okay. I've got to get my Christmas shopping finished up. I'm looking for people to tell the boyfriend that I want a ring.
Okay. I would take one of those, too.
So, if you want to mention that to him.
All right.
All right. If you're still trying to find that Christmas spirit or the perfect Christmas gift, Moscow Classical Ballet is presenting the Nutcracker this weekend at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. That's 7 o'clock tomorrow, 2 and 7 Saturday, and 2 on Sunday, and tickets start at $32. On Saturday, it's the other half of the Block Street Art Sale.
Okay.
Half of it, all of it was canceled by the snow and ice.
Right.
Half of it was last weekend.
Right.
The other half of it is this weekend, called the Itty Bitty Weddington Christmas Sale. And it includes Faye Alter and Susan Shore and Deborah Dubois and others from 11 to 4 Saturday. That's on Pin Oak Road in Fayetteville. And if you check what's up, we'll have that address for you. And Christmas with the Arkansas Philharmonic is at 7:30 Saturday at the Arend Art Center in Bentonville. And they promise lots of wonderful things. Tickets are $25 for adults and $5 for students.
Okay. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Fairies and mortals mingle in Britain's enchanting opera, A Midsummer Night's Dream. I'm Margaret Jonthwaite. Join me for a special Met broadcast in honor of the composer's centennial. Our extraordinary ensemble cast includes Yestin Davis, Kathleen Kim, and Matthew Rose, conducted by Maestro James Conlon. A Midsummer Night's Dream, Saturday, on the Toll Brothers Metropolitan Opera International Radio Network.
Saturday's opera begins at noon on 91.3 FM.
Helping feed those in need is an issue that is often front and center during the holiday season. This week, one organization is passing out food to families in six counties in north central Arkansas, thanks to help from the USDA. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Ozark Opportunities Incorporated is a private, nonprofit corporation that provides services in a six-county area that includes Baxter, Boone, Marion, Newton, Searcy, and Van Buren counties. According to the Community Action Agency's website, the group's mission is to partner with organizations, families, and individuals to provide services and empowerment opportunities for those with limited means to improve their quality of life. Rebecca Hanlon, Community Services Director for Ozark Opportunities, says some of their programs include Head Start, a home energy assistance program set to launch in January, and distributing surplus food from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. This week, Ozark Opportunities has begun distributing donated food from the USDA to qualifying families in need.
This is USDA surplus food, and to be eligible for low income, and it's based off of 130% federal poverty guidelines. So, for instance, if there's one in the household, it would be $1,245 a month. A family of four that would be eligible if they made under $2,552, and that is per month. This distribution, we get distributions quarterly, so four times a year or once every 3 months. And this distribution, we've got beef stew, milk, peaches, fruit, nut mix, carrots, spaghetti sauce, beans, pasta, apple juice. They're all non-perishable.
Hanlon says the program does not require participants to bring proof of their income, but they must know what their gross monthly income is. They must also bring a photo ID, such as a driver's license or Arkansas ID. Participants must also pick up food in the county in which they live. Hanlon says the food will be distributed as a package.
We've got them bundled where this selection of food, everybody gets. If there's five in the household or more, they'll get two bags. But they get an assortment of all of it. It's not a pick and choose. We get the delivery and we bag up all the groceries. According to a ratio, you know, it could be three cans of peaches and two cans of milk. It just depends on how much we receive.
Hanlon estimates they have enough food to distribute to 1,000 families across the six-county area they serve.
The ratio, the number of families we help in a community or a county, is determined by how many other food banks are in the area. So, for instance, Newton County and Searcy counties, there aren't a lot of food banks there, so we get more food for those counties.
The food will be distributed on a first-come, first-served basis. Hanlon says it's important to organize these types of events because, for some, hunger is an issue year-round.
People aren't hungry only over the holidays. It's a year-round challenge. It is important for our agency to partner with other entities because we are a nonprofit, so we don't have a lot of funds to purchase food in order to give out. It helps supplement what we are able to do, so we're able to impact the community more.
Distribution in Newton County begins today in Jasper at 506 West Court. The distribution location will then be open Tuesdays from 8:30 a.m. to noon and 12:30 to 3:30 p.m. More information is available at 870-446-2222. The Boone County Distribution Center will open tomorrow at 406 Highway 43 East in Harrison. The center will then be open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to noon and 12:30 to 4 p.m. More information is available at 870-741-2089. To learn more about Ozark Opportunities Incorporated, you can visit OzarkOpp, that's OPP.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department is responding to criticism over road conditions during the winter storm in early December. Content partner KUAR's Karen Trico-Stewart has the details.
It was a photo circulating on social media sites that made the department feel it needed to put out a statement addressing the poor response. Spokesman Danny Stracely.
There was a photo that illustrated Highway 71 in Bella Vista at the Missouri state line. The Missouri side was clear. The Arkansas side still had snow and ice on it. And that pretty much became a rallying point for folks who kind of took note of that and said, you know, hey, what's going on here? How come Missouri can get the roads clear and it appears that Arkansas can't?
The statement released by the Highway Department says the agency knows it did not achieve desirable or even acceptable results in some parts of the state with regard to clearing highways during the winter storm. Stracely defends the response in central Arkansas, but says in northwest Arkansas the results were unsatisfactory. The department says it believes the poor results were not due to a lack of effort by road crews, who it says worked around the clock to respond. The problem, Stracely says, is the crews lacked the proper equipment and experience to address the storm.
We don't have professional snowplow drivers in Arkansas. The folks that are out there plowing the snow and the ice are the same folks that are driving these trucks to haul gravel, the ones that are out there patching asphalt in the summer, hauling debris when storms, you know, litter the highways and things like that. You know, other states, they have, you know, they call them snowplow jocks, and they do this all the time.
Stracely says the department feels it's not cost-effective or feasible for the state to invest in specialized snow and ice-fighting equipment that would only be used a few times per year and has no practical applications for any other part of the year.
The dump truck is the most versatile piece of equipment that we can use because we can use it in the summer, we can use it in the spring, and then when the winter weather comes, we can put a plow on it.
He says the department is investing in a handful of belly plows, which are larger dump trucks that have a plow under the truck in addition to a plow on the front. He says there will be four or five of those by the first of the year, which the department says will lead to better results when addressing winter weather. Karen Trigo-Stewart, KUAR News.
This is Ozarks at Large. Each Thursday evening, a group of 15 or so women and men, ranging in ages from 19 to, well, much older, meet for Knit Night at Handheld, a yarn shop on Block Street in Fayetteville. I arrive on a blustery and snowy eve, and just five ladies surround an oval table in the center of a long and narrow room full of yarn in every color and texture imaginable. I am quickly offered a glass of wine, to which I immediately accept, and a round of friendly toasts begins.
Here's to those that wish us well. All the rest can go to hell.
Amen.
Amen.
Yes.
Yeah, you should know a toast in Spanish.
Though knitting is pretty much a solo hobby, something that can be done with your feet up in front of the fireplace, and is sometimes easier to do at home if you have a difficult pattern and lots of yarn, the companionship is what most come to Knit Night for. Knitter Jane says that talking to new friends about a similar interest has its benefits.
This group is basically on the same level that I am, so it's bounce pattern ideas off each other, talk about different things, inspire each other, help each other solve problems, and not always with knitting needles.
She says it reminds her of the old quilting bees women used to have during colonial times. Jane is a recently retired CPA who moved to the area just over a year ago. She was thrilled to come to Northwest Arkansas, where Handheld is just one of three yarn stores. This is where she found the yarn for the sweater she is currently working on. She had purchased the pattern from England nearly 7 years ago, taking her that long to find the perfect green to match her kilt.
It's basically built on a short jacket, which is very popular, and like I said, a Celtic knot, which is the intertwined cables that go in and out. It's almost like the old love knot that was in Victorian times. And then I've got small cables, they call them, that separate the two. And I liked this pattern particularly because when you get to one side of the front, the cables mirror what they are on the other side. so that you add a little bit of extra design touch that you don't get on your store-bought garments.
Funny that it took Jane so long to find that perfect yarn. She has a yarn room, much like another knitter I know, containing a stash that she will probably never use in her lifetime.
They call it Sable Stash Acquisition Beyond Life Expectancy.
Jane has calculated that if she knits at the rate she's going, she will be 187 years old when she's finished with the yarn she has. Yet, she continues to acquire more. Knitting is a series of loops on loops, one row at a time, moving one loop from one needle and using a needle to pull the yarn through that loop, the size of the needle determining the size of the row and the pattern. But have you ever seen needles as large as your arm? Cynthia Parker is the owner and proprietor of Handheld. After rolling a skein of green merino wool into a ball, using her knees as a guide, she ties slip knots around her wrists to get started.
You pull this loop over onto this hand, and you feed the yarn through it, and that makes a stitch. So I'm feeding the loop through the stitch, and that's been knitted. Feed the loop through the stitch.
It takes her just less than 30 minutes to make an infinity scarf with large and floppy loops bearing goat hair flowers. Though this technique is relatively new, at just a couple of years, Cynthia started knitting at 5 years old and remembers her great-grandmother teaching her.
We both got in trouble. It was Thanksgiving and we were both in trouble. And so they kind of, she was probably like 95. And my great-grandmother McDonald. And so they sat us both in the corner. And she taught me.
Cynthia started with a very primitive slipper, moving on to Barbie clothes and now human clothes, some of which hang from the ceiling of her store. These pieces are samples of what you can do with a particular yarn, but are also for sale. She has been knitting since that Thanksgiving day, though she did have to take a hiatus because knitting had injured her. That's right, a knitting injury.
I did hurt myself knitting. I hurt my neck. And so I stopped for about 8 or 9 years. I know. And you know what it was? I needed glasses.
So how did you hurt your neck knitting?
All scrunched over and...
Cynthia isn't the original owner of Handheld, though the first time she walked into it at its original location on East Avenue, she said, "I'm going to work here someday." And she did. She began by teaching workshops and such until the previous owners and friends decided to retire. Though those two still attend knit nights. Joanne Phillips is not one of the former owners, and also not what she calls a consistent knitter. The reddish-brown sweater she is making for her son-in-law, number two, is just the fourth sweater she has ever knitted. She calls herself a novice, yet she is anything but making the sweater without a pattern.
I go by the measurements of their waist and shoulders and neck and everything and arm length, and then go by the gauge of my needle and my yarn together. So I don't know that it's more difficult. Basically I am designing a sweater. It sounds difficult, but I consider myself a very novice knitter. There's some real talent that comes here, and I would not consider myself even close to that. No.
Joanne says the knit pearl pattern of stitches is pretty simple, though she is proud of the work she is doing. This fourth project, she hasn't had to rip out and start over. She's anxious to knit something for herself next, though she never thought of herself as a sweater person.
Everything itches me. You know, I've learned new terminology. It is not the fabric that's itching me. It's the bloom. That those little fibers that come off of it that tickle, you know. So I don't know what I'm going to knit yet, but there's all kinds of yarn in here that doesn't have a bloom on it. So I will probably silk.
You can hear the camaraderie that occurs at knit night. Everyone chiming in the conversation, or not, that's okay too, helping one another out. Even Sasha, the black shop cat, made an appearance, rubbing against her owner's legs as she arm-knitted. Though I'm not a knitter, I too was immediately accepted. And when I'm ready to learn, I know where to go. Handheld will offer workshops in the coming year, in addition to one-on-one teaching by appointment Tuesday through Friday. For more information, visit handheldknitting.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Estonian composer Arvo Pärt is up for a Grammy nomination with his new composition, Adam's Lament. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony, Sunday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on KUAF. Join me for Arvo Pärt's Adam's Lament with the Latvian Radio Choir led by Toņu Kaluste. That's coming up 7 to 9 p.m. right here on KUAF.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Harmon.
Harmon. Where is Harmon?
Boone County.
Boone County. There you go.
On the eastern edge of our tertiary listening area.
Okay.
Because people can listen anywhere, right?
Right. You can listen anywhere online at KUAF.com.
That's right. A few items of note before we end the show, because there are still some things rescheduled, still some things that are happening around the holidays.
There are. Main Street Siloam Springs has announced four recipients of the 2013 Gloria McEnroe Facade Renovation Grant. The Siloam Springs Chamber of Commerce, Dina Dickinson's Law Office, Dogwood Literacy Council, and Style Studio. The grant, named after a longtime dedicated board member and Siloam Springs citizen, provides a dollar-for-dollar match of up to $1,000 per project per year to selected applicants in the Main Street Siloam Springs program area for exterior building improvements. A lot of those improvements to those buildings have actually already been made.
Right.
And downtown Siloam Springs is looking really good.
I'm telling you, I went there, you know, to go behind the scenes at kind of at 28 Springs. Mm-hmm. And the story about Siloam Springs downtown coming in early 2014 on Ozarks at Large. Speaking of money, organizers of Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue announced $105,000 in donations to area charities, the second largest amount that's been given since the rally began in 2000. Individual donations range in amounts from $1,000 to $28,000. A few of the two dozen organizations benefiting include Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northwest Arkansas, Camp Alliance, Youth Bridge, Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, and the Northwest Arkansas Economic Development District.
Registration is now open for one-day computer training classes for Adobe and 2013 Microsoft. It's offered through the University of Arkansas Global Campus facilities in both Rogers and Fayetteville in the spring of 2014. 30 classes will be offered at various skill levels from basic to advanced. A maximum of 12 students can enroll in each one-day class, providing a low student-to-teacher ratio. For more information, visit globalcampus.uark.edu.
Antoinette Grajeda and I will be here tomorrow for a brand new edition of Friday Ozarks at Large. You and I back Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Right.
You're handling things by yourself on Monday the 23rd.
I am.
Want to remind people that on the 24th, you can hear our Christmas show that was recorded at the Fayetteville Public Library. Not all of it, but the highlights, some of the highlights. That'll be on Christmas Eve at noon and 7.
On the Christmas Day edition of Ozarks at Large, we actually won't be here.
No, we're going to take the day off. We're going to take the day off. A feature from NPR called Tinsel Tales, some of their favorite holiday stories. That will air in our place both at noon and 7 on the 25th. And then back kind of to normal on the 26th and 27th. And then the week after that, our annual gathering of the whole Ozarks at Large staff to talk about some of our favorite and listen again to some of our favorite stories and interviews from 2013. So that will be the week of December 30th.
I always enjoy choosing my favorites and getting together with you guys to talk about them. So I hope the listeners enjoy that.
I hope so,
also.
Too. And it's a chance to hear some stories again that maybe you miss. So that will be the week of December 30th. And our Christmas show again will be on Tuesday, Christmas Eve, with plenty of locally made holiday music.
That's
I think
right.
You're going to have a lot of fun if you missed it and weren't at the library. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And as I mentioned, Antoinette Grajeda will join me tomorrow at this time for another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.
And until then, thank you so much for listening and have a good Thursday.